relived.
Exactly. And the reason why it makes me think about that is this sense of what if? And I maybe this is a bit of an out there question, but if we are supporting folks who are incredible musicians, like truly incredible musicians, regardless of race or gender identity, what could that have truly blossomed into? Jackie Shane achieved incredible success despite of attitudes at the time. I wonder for folks listening today who are hoping to be inspired, hoping to create and share their passion. I don't know, it just makes me think of what if the world was closer to 2024 back then, what we could have really seen being created and shared. I don't know if either of you have that was a terrible question, but I'm curious if either of you have thoughts on that. What could potentially have been Jackie Shane's success had it not being the Jim Crow era in Nashville.
Well, maybe I can go cynical, and maybe Luca can go
Sure.
hopeful. I think I know that why Jackie thought now was the time to tell her story, and I feel like the reason we felt it really urgent and important to tell this story was not necessarily because it was a story that she could now tell, that the world was ready for this, but that it was a story that was needed because of what's happening right now and what has been happening, forever. So I mean, I think, I don't, what could have been, I think more of what could have been, I guess, pragmatically from like Jackie wanted to come out and play again and perform again. And, what would that have looked like? And seeing, like, some young kid seeing this person on stage that lived through Jim Crow, that lived in a, arguably more dangerous time, more bluntly dangerous time. What would it see? What would it do in terms of inspiring and courage and stuff to see this woman on stage performing again? And despite some of her really hard times, and when the times when she was writing things like "I Was Born But I Never Lived," Jackie was an incredibly joyful person. Like she was, she looked at the people that were trying to stop her, people that were the homophobes and the racists. She thought and knew that these people were motivated by fear. She wasn't scared, and so, to me, that would be an incredible thing to see. But, I guess our hope is, and the reality is that maybe that can happen by watching Jackie perform and hearing Jackie tell her story in this film.
Yeah, I agree with all that, and I think this won't be the fully optimistic thing that you had mentioned, but I think would have for sure like inspired, continued to inspire queer people, continue to inspire allies, and maybe she would have felt she wouldn't have felt all the complicated feelings that she felt, although she probably still would have felt some of them. But I think in today's day and age, right now, like to your point about where we're at with politics, she also may have been another outlet for a lot of transphobic people to be making comments. And even though she's strong enough to handle it, or she was strong enough to handle it, I think that it would have been great, but it wouldn't have been 100% easy, because just due to the times that we're in. And I think back to 15 years ago when I first transitioned, I wanted to live in a world where people knew what trans people who they were and just knew of us in general. But now we're kind of seeing a bit of an aftermath of that, or a very challenging time in what it looks like to get to a place where there's more acceptance. Because yeah, now more people know about transition, but it doesn't mean everybody is accepting.
It almost seems like a crime against our own culture. And I say that because of the incredible cultural impact that Jackie Shane had on the sound of Toronto, and elsewhere. But it seems like a crime against our culture that incredible people who are so creative and able to bring so much to the table don't have that same free rein just because of prejudices and hate. It's really quite disheartening. I am curious though. You've been knee deep in this for a while, putting the documentary together. I am wondering, were there any moments in pulling the story together where you were surprised, where something came to light, or somebody said something that actually surprised you in a way? I'm curious if we can tease that for our audience.
Well, and certainly in my time speaking with Jackie, she referred to her mother as her mother. Jessie was her mother, and that was it. And publicly, that's what was known. And when we went down to Nashville and going through her things, found out that in fact Jessie was her aunt, and that her mother was unable, unwilling to be there for her. And partially because her new husband didn't want to be there for Jackie and was abusive to Jackie. But the idea that this woman who she adored and loved and spoke of as her mother and all the things that she had done, that was shock to us. We didn't know that she was married, and whether she was married or not, but that she considered herself to be married to Dan when she moved to Los Angeles. That was certainly extraordinary and interesting. We didn't know there was any other recordings of Jackie, and when we found a reel-to-reel tape with a song that's in the film called "Hey, Mr. Cool Guy," which is just stunning. And we heard that for the first time as we were unpacking all of her stuff, surrounded by all of her stuff, all of her treasures, all of her outfits, jewels, everything, and hearing this voice of a song that we had never heard. That was absolutely incredible. And Luca?
Yeah, all that. It was amazing. And we didn't know she had a fake ID, that she had actually gotten an ID that was sent to female and that had a different name. And that she was using it when she lived in LA to pass.
Excellent. Well, I mentioned at the top of the interview that I'm going to be trying to make my way down to the Bytown Cinema on the 25th of August in about a week or so to go and see the film myself. But for our listeners in Toronto, the Fox Theatre has it on August 16th. It's at the TIFF Lightbox on the 23rd. Folks in Montreal can see it at Cinéma du Parc on the 16th. And I think Winnipeg is at the Dave Barber Cinematheque at September 4th, screening room in Kingston on September 6th. And for folks out in Halifax at CKDU FM, they can see it at the Cineplex Cinemas in Park Lane on the 20th. I imagine you're looking at getting it into more places and reaching more incredible Canadian audiences. But what final words would you like to share with our audience about why they should go and see this great documentary?
Yeah, that's it. It'll be in Wolfville. It'll be in Rolling, and there's many. It's playing throughout. There's three different screenings through, or three different theaters playing it in Montreal. So, and throughout Canada. So keep your eyes out. And this Jackie was one of the funniest people I've ever met. This film is, I don't think we shy away from any of the realities, but this film is full of laughter and full of extraordinary music. Like it's a tremendously entertaining film that happens to have kind of an extraordinary message that Jackie brings. So I think it's a lot of fun.
100%, super funny. She's just someone that you'll walk out of the theater just thinking, yeah, what a talent. And that's just great.
Well, we're going to be jumping to Any Other Way by Jackie Shane. Hopefully, we'll have another track from Jackie Shane later in the show. I want to thank Luca and Michael so much for joining me and sharing your experience putting together this truly incredible product. And I hope all the folks listening will go out and see it. And if you're in Toronto and maybe have some old 8mm or reel-to-reels, reach out. I'm sure the folks would love to see any archival information that you can find. Thank you so much, and we'll be back just.
come again. And you say that you're my friend. But I know why you're here. She wants to know how I feel. Tell her that I'm happy. Tell her that I'm gay. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way. Broken heart. But when you see my baby, here's what you say. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way. My friend, now we'd better say goodbye. I think you'd better go right now, or you might see me cry. But when you see my baby, this is what you say.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer medium. My name remains Luke Smith, and Sebastian remains indisposed. We'll get back to him a little later in the show as he rejoins our conversation. We just heard Any Other Way by the incredibly talented Jack Shane, following our conversation with the two directors of Any Other Way, the documentary featuring Jackie Shane a little earlier in the show. But I am very excited to have joining me today, really serendipitous. I happen to be speaking, I don't know how many people are in the media department at the National Film Board, but I think I've spoken probably to, half the team there, if not more, separately over the course of the last couple of weeks. But I am joined by Camila Martin Flores, the collections curator at the National Film Board. Thank you so much for joining me. Would you like to introduce yourself and maybe a bit about what it is that you do?
Yeah, so, well, thanks for having me and thanks for promoting the NFB Films. Well, my job as a curator, well, in basically involves looking after the best interest of the film collection, as well as showcasing and enriching the collection and to help promoting it to the public and to the NFB staff. My job involves developing editorial lines to the programming on nfb.ca, which is our website, as well as writing contextual texts on the NFB films, artists, and history. So thus contributing to the promotion of online programming and the institution in general.
Now, for our listeners all over the country, you know, from rural communities to downtown Toronto, how easy is it to find these films? Like, is it, can we just plop them into Google and pull it up? Are they all on the NFB website?
Well, the entire collection is online, but information on the collection is online. Like, if you type a title or a director and you Google it, you're gonna find information on the film. But there are, like, the NFB archives contains about 13,000 titles, so the website has been up for about 15 years. So in the last 15 years, we have managed to put up 6,000 films, so about half of the collection. So if you manage to, like, if you find a film or you want to get a film that you don't find on nfb.ca, it's easier for us if you send us an email or a request saying, okay, I have this film that I remember that I saw it in the 1970s, that it was shot by the NFB. I wonder if the film could go up, could go online. And then we would find it, try to digitize it, and then get it up. Sometimes there are films that include, I don't know, songs by Janis Joplin. And then it costs about $15,000 or even $100,000. And then that's practically impossible for us to cover and to pay for these rights and to put the films up. With about $15,000, we could put, I don't know, about 10 films from, you know, all over the country. So it depends at the end on us, on me and my supervisors, what type of films we want to put up, depending on the programming that we are monthly curating for the public on nfb.ca.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned the rights issue. I think we'll get into that a little bit later when we touch on Passiflora in particular. I went right down that rabbit hole. So we'll get onto that one. But the reason why your work was really brought to my attention is the way that the National Film Board is sort of teaming up to celebrate the Public Service Pride Week, which is taking place now. For those who aren't familiar, Ottawa Pride in the capital takes place from the 19th through to the 23rd. I think there's even stuff happening right now at time of recording. And Public Service Pride, given the amount of federal public servants that reside in Ottawa, tends to land the same time as Ottawa Pride. So what inspired this 2SLGBTQIA+ collection for the Public Service Pride sort of tie-in? What was your thinking going into releasing these? And I think it's three of them that got released as part of this smaller collection. But what was the thinking that went into these three out of the thousands that you could have chosen from?
Yeah, well, I've been at the position for a couple of years. And since my arrival, my objective was to find different ways to promote the collection and have a more inclusive, multi-plural, and decolonial approach to the NFB collection. Therefore, in these years, I have placed a focus on films made by Indigenous youth, women, Black Canadians, Asian Canadians, Latinx Canadians, Arab Canadians, members of the 2SLGBTQI+ community, among many, many others. So basically, it was about 2 years ago that I received a request by email from Dr. Albert William McLeod. He's an individual from Manitoba who has been working for the past 35 years for the rights of two-spirit, lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, and queer people across the continent. Dr. McLeod kindly requested us if we were planning to organize an event to commemorate the 30th anniversary of the release of the landmark film Out Stories of Gay and Lesbian Youth. I honestly didn't know anything about the film. So I started to do a research on the film, and I saw that it was one of the few Canadian documentaries that dealt with these subject matters back in those days, which already made this film exceptional to me. And then doing this research, I realized that there were several films not available on nfb.ca dealing with this subject matter. Therefore, after watching Out, the film that Dr. McLeod requested, I got the idea of curating a programming for the Proud Week Public Service in 2003. And I started researching for films that could represent or that have been made at different decades. So I remember that I had watched a film that dealt with these subjects when I was doing my bachelor's degree in 2000 something, that was made in the 1980s. And I had to visit my school notes, and I found the film that was presented to us as seminal by a professor that was teaching the course at Concordia University. I studied in Montreal. And then the film was Passiflora. And then, to my surprise, the film was not on NFB.ca, so I jumped off happiness when I found the film, because I requested then the film, if we had a copy of the film in the archives, and we have it, or we had it. So I consulted with my supervisor, and then I was given permission to request the digitization and restoration of the film. And then after watching the film, because I didn't know what the film was about, and then I get familiar again with the film, I requested permission to have the film subtitled and to have the rights cleared out to be, like, to have it on NFB.ca and ONF.ca for free. So then that process of digitizing, restoring, and subtitling Passiflora took about 2 years. And then since I had a film from the 1990s out and then a film from the 1980s, Passiflora, I wanted to have a third element that could complement the programming. And then surprisingly, the NFB archives also contained the film Escape to Canada, which was a newer and catchy film that I thought it would complement the programming. And so that's the criteria behind the programming.
I mean, I think it's really interesting that, I mean, first of all, we want to acknowledge that the National Film Board has supported Canadian creative works for a long time. Now, you mentioned right at the top of the interview, you're wanting to take a view towards the films that that recenter voices that we haven't seen as much of from the NFB. In your experience, what do you think about how Passiflora was treated, you know, 80s on to how it's treated now, and sort of where that reflects the NFB of today?
Yeah, well, as I said, I've been in the position for a couple of years only. As I said, my approach to the collection, I guess, and that was part of my interview that I had to, what would I bring to the NFB to discover other films that are in the archives and that are not yet available for the public. So one of the things that I did, or the first thing that I did, the first program that I proposed was Latinx Canadian cinema at the NFB. So I made a research that is 80 years, that it contains 80 years of history of NFB filmmakers making films in Latin America, or Latin Americans making films in Canada about Latin America or about their experiences in Canada. So that's my approach. I saw no problem whatsoever with my supervisors, with anybody, to get the film out. I guess we were also lucky in a way because we had a decent amount of money this year to get many films out. So I managed to get the film in. Subtitling the film is also very costly. So I guess it was also, I was lucky in a way. The fact that I was joining the public Service Pride Week was also a plus for me to get the funds to get this film out. So I don't know. I didn't have any problems whatsoever to get the film out. If you visit NFB.ca and check the blog post that I wrote that you mentioned in the beginning, we have also managed to create the director's page for each filmmaker included in this blog post, because we like to put a face and a personal story to the films we take out from the vaults and promote to the public. So we just completed Alberta Nuremberg's, David Atkins, Fernand Bélanger, and Dagmar Toffel's biofilmography. So the films are there, the directors are there. So I just invite you guys to come and check the films out, because they are really terrific. Like, these three films made or dealing with two LGBTQI plus subject matter are incredible. I don't know how many countries in the world could say that could have three films that are landmarks of the community dating from the 1980s. So, I don't know, Canadians should be extremely proud about the NFB and how the NFB has put money and supported these subject matters from the 60s, actually. That's going to be my next blog post. But anyway, that's going to be for the future, in a year.
Our community has struggled to capture and see its own history. There is film from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s, you know, featuring people and voices from before and during the HIV epidemic. It really helps to give a sense of, wow, we've always been here. We've always been a part of Canadian culture. And these films have done a great job of capturing that in their own ways. And going from that, but maybe in your closing comments for our audience here, what would you say to motivate or inspire somebody listening to go into the collection, maybe this particular collection of three, or the collection more broadly, to learn more about Canadian expression?
Yeah, well, sadly, all these films remain relatively unknown for the community around the world and also for Canadians. To me, the NFB's archive is a gold mine that is constantly putting out gems for like from the Canadian family album. So this is what I want to say. So the NFB is Canada's family album, and the community is included in that family album, as you said, from the 60s, from the 80s, 70s. So. I would invite people to acknowledge these films and to acknowledge what the NFB has put in terms of resources, people, money, to get this rich, amazing family album. And we are putting a lot of work to get these films out. Plenty of more films that are coming out from the vaults. It's my job, and I envision that as a personal even challenge to get as many films from the vaults that project a more inclusive, multi-plural, and decolonial view of Canada and the collection. So I invite you all to go to nfb.ca. You don't need any login. Just type in nfb.ca, and you have 4,000 films at your fingertips.
Well, I know that some good friends of mine, Sebastian as well, have a weekly movie night with a couple of the friends, and maybe they can dive into some of these. I know that many of the film festivals in the queer community frequently dip their toes into the collection to see them. So don't forget that if you wanted to catch Escape to Canada or Out, Stories of Lesbian and Gay Youth, or as I mentioned earlier, Passiflora, all three are now available. Thank you so much, Camilo, for taking the time to speak with us. But also, perhaps more importantly, thank you so much for all of your work in resurrecting and spotlighting the incredible work in our community. It is greatly appreciated.
Thank you so much.
And that's the end of our show. Sorry for we don't have a huge amount of time just left. Sebastian, as I mentioned at the top of the show, very excited to have the exclusive of this brand new track by Jackie Shane, this sort of unearthed recording of by Jackie Shane. Any closing comments from yourself?
I mean, I love the sort of like soul blues, early funk, that sort of region that Jackie Shane encompassed. And I'm very much looking forward to this. And otherwise, I'm just hoping we have a good week here in Ottawa.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. We know that we'll be there with the popcorn and a microphone. This is a clip of Hey Mr. Cool Guy, the new release, hopefully released soon, by the incredible Jackie Shane. I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Take yourself a bow. Just lost another girl, as only you know how. You're such a silly fool, trying to be so cool. You better watch out, watch yourself, 'cause one day you'll find out. No big thing to have a girl, boy. One for every day.
One for every day. We are young.